relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
And when it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place, that God willing, when it's over, we'll be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
Is it the great reset? Is it the great transition? What are those high gas prices? It's wonderful because it means everybody's going to drive a Tesla. You heard it there from the horse's mouth, or is it the jackass? I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One. And we're going to dive into all of this and what it means for you with a very special guest who taught me most of what I know about the climate change fraud. He is the founder of ClimateDepot.com. He's the author of numerous works, Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. The book that educated me the most, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. And the latest, it's not even out yet. It's got somebody, they're waiting for some crazy guy with a British accent to write the foreword. It is The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. Mark Morano, welcome to America First One-on-One.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. I'm happy to be here. I think we can announce it. I think you're the individual with the British accent. I'm honored that you're writing the foreword to my book.
Now the pressure's, now you let the cat out of the bag. Now there's a name to this person who's already late. He's got to write the foreword, but he will get it to your publishers. But you can pre-order. It's already out there. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now. So, Mark, let's start with you know, just my gratitude to you. There's so much disinfo. If there was a need for a, you know, disinformation governance board, there would be one main reason we need it: for the lies of Al Gore, Greta Thunberg, AOC, and everybody else when it comes to, you know, this hysteria for what, 60 years now. First it was overpopulation, the Malthusians, then it was the coming ice age, then it was the ozone, then it was acid rain, then it was climate change. No, then it was a global warming, then now it's climate change. It's all garbage. I learned so much, especially from your Politically Incorrect Guide to climate change. But let's start with this cut I just played. The elite, quote unquote, we shouldn't call them that, but the people who are in power, they really believe this line from Obama's former chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, that a crisis is great. You know, you can't get baby formula. Well, we should go vegan. Gas is at $8 in California. We're just going to buy electric vehicles. For them, a crisis is a good thing because it means they can exert more power, correct?
It is. And if you go back even to the words of Vladimir Lenin, the worse, the better. And I did some historical research to make sure that quote, it's generally attributed to him. And, you know, before the Russian Revolution, the worse they can make it, the better. You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet, break some shells. And what Biden's basically saying there, and what his cabinet agency is saying, what his appointee who actually said we kids don't need the clothes on their back because they're not going to have a future unless we deal with climate change, they're offering up their Green New Deal as a sort of chemotherapy for this fatal cancer that we face of climate change. And this is literally how they think. So we should be welcoming this pain of the Biden administration, which is offering mega dose of chemotherapy. But there's one problem. The chemotherapy is not going to work because we don't have the condition that we were diagnosed with. And that's why every cabinet appointee of Biden now is praising the pain that Americans are going through because, in the words of, I think it was the Norwegian finance minister in Davos last week, it's so worth it to be suffering like this because it's a transition that needs to happen. So when your hair is falling out and you're vomiting from chemo, the idea is you're supposed to keep your eye on the prize, and the prize is living. In this case, they're telling us wrongly that we have to go through this pain in order to save ourselves and our children from the climate apocalypse that's coming. That's literally their logic and reasoning. It's scientific malpractice.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I love that analogy that they want to force this absolutely destructive chemotherapy against an organism, us, that doesn't actually have cancer. So you're just going to be attacking a healthy body. Let me put a spin on that analogy. It's not the climate change, the weather, whatever, that is the illness they want to fix, and an illness that doesn't exist. If we really go back in time, if we go to the Malthusians, the eugenicists, the people who are interested in you know, overpopulation, isn't it fair to say, if you really dig deep and you scratch the surface of the propagandists, the disease isn't the weather, whatever they come up with, or the ozone? Isn't the disease us? I mean, isn't the philosophy of these people deep down, the Greta Thunbergs of the world, that humanity is the issue? And it's almost like, you know, a Gaia-based Mother Earth cult in its essence.
It absolutely is. They actually, and I've interviewed Hans Schulenherber, the German climate advisor, who literally says the carrying capacity of our Earth is 1 billion people. Now, what are we at? 7-8 billion people? Yep. They want to eliminate 6-7 billion people because that's the sustainable level. So when you hear that Bill Gates, according to NBC News, is the number one farm owner, followed close in the heels by China buying up farmland, and then you say, why does Bill Gates care about farmland? Well, his number one goal is to stop meat production, meat eating, and he's promoting fake vegetable processed meat. So is the World Economic Forum. They brag that you can print up this fake meat. But ultimately, they want shortages. They want rationing, because that will lead to diminishing population over time, and it'll lead to a more sustainable Earth. And this has been going on since, you mentioned it earlier, Sebastian, Paul Ehrlich in the 1960s, the overpopulation bomb. His only mistake, by the way, he made a lot of predictions in 5-10 years, and he had egg all over his face. He predicted on Johnny Carson's TV show in 1980 that oil would be run out in 10 years. So one thing the climate alarmists have learned, although not AOC, she said 12 years, but many of them put deadlines now, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. They try to put a deadline, though, so they'll be long dead, and people won't be around to realize how wrong they were. But essentially, it's a war against humanity. It's a war against modern life. And one other point, you're absolutely right. They are just, climate is just the latest scare in a long line of scares. In Green Fraud, I have a whole chapter how the 1970s global cooling scare, essentially fossil fuels caused global cooling before fossil fuels caused global warming. And the solutions were the same: wealth redistribution, treaty sovereignty, limiting treaties, taking away freedom, scarcity, shortages. We had Paul Ehrlich lament, John Holdren, Obama's former science writer, 1976, lamenting that Americans could hop in their car and go to this grocery store and buy a six pack of beer and drive home. There was a war on freedom, and that's what it's about. They don't want free movement, free people. They want us controlled, boxed in, as we were under a COVID lockdown. That was the left and the progressives' utopian vision of the world. Planned recessions, government clampdown, stay-at-home orders, no travel, no economic growth, everyone listening to every unelected bureaucrat. And I mean that. That literally was their utopian vision, and that's why they praised it. That's why Jane Fonda said COVID was God's gift to the left.
Right. They want a lockdown on our freedoms as they travel in their private jets to Switzerland, to those swanky hotels. Explain for us why they had to make the latest switch. Why did it go from global warming to climate change? It's because the narrative started to break down, correct, Mark?
Yes, I was actually on a UN climate summit in 2007 in Bali, Indonesia. My tickets were like 15,000 round trip. I worked for the U.S. Senate at the time, Senate Environment and Public Works. State Department paid our staff. At this summit, one of the hot topics was, and I remember debating a John McCain staffer behind the scenes. This was John McCain, who at the time was proposing cap and trade and partnering up with Democrats. He was doing his usual John McCain, you know, activities. But his chief climate staffer was telling me that they were going to pivot and blame every weather disaster on climate, because essentially they were getting nowhere, like you said, with nowhere with the phrase global warming. And even Barbara Boxer, started changing our committee hearings to reflect climate change. And the gist of it was they were too limited by temperature. And one of the problems was we were going through a temperature pause at the time. And then, of course, we had a little bump up, but we're back in another temperature standstill. And it was just inconvenient. They couldn't deal with it. So instead, every flood, hurricane, tornado, wildfire, they could blame now on literally climate change. And that's why they changed the name. And it was about 15 years ago. And then they came up with extreme weather. And that's what it all became. Now, any bad weather event anywhere on the planet is more evidence of climate change.
Shocking. And of course, it was a McCain staffer. We're talking to the founder of Climate Depot. Go to climatedepot.com. You can follow him at Climate Depot. The latest book, you can order it now. You probably will get it by the time I write the foreword, is The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. We'll talk about what that means for you. This is America First. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's absolutely free. Guarantee that you never miss an episode. Write a review. It helps. And of course, share the links. That's America First, Sebastian Gorka. If you haven't done so already, register right now for our Stand With Israel tour. 10 days later this year in the Holy Land with my Salem colleague, the director, none other, of 2,000 Mules. Yes, Dinesh D'Souza and his lovely wife will be joining me. I'm not vaccinated and I'm going to Israel. There are no restrictions. Join us for the trip of a lifetime. Places you may only have read about will be there. We'll be standing on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. We'll be there on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem at the Garden of Gethsemane. You do not want to miss it. Reserve your tickets today by calling 855-565-5519 or just with IsraelTour.com. That's 855-565-5519. StandWithIsraelTour.com. That's StandWithIsraelTour.com. Dear friends, you know my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll get $90 off a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. They took over 2 years to develop. They're designed to wear indoor and out. I've already worn out my first pair of My Slippers, and they're made with the same amazing My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue and lined with real suede. Call 800-829-8468. Use promo code Gorka for that massive discount, or just go to mypillow.com and click on the radio listener square and put in the secret code G-O-R-K-A. This offer won't last long. You won't regret it. They are the best slippers I have ever owned. And $90 off MyPillow.com. Do it today. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Mark, I have to ask you the cost of... Well, let's talk about the effect on quote-unquote science. Let's start with the thing that, you know, even well-meaning individuals that have massive influence like Joe Rogan have totally fallen for this 96% consensus of scientists when it comes to global warming and climate change. Talk to us about that figure, where it comes from. But let's start first with the principles. When in the history of modern science did science become a question of voting and consensus? I thought that's the opposite of the scientific method. Am I wrong?
No, it's absolutely the opposite. And actually, Michael Crichton gave a great speech.
Yes.
That's just explaining the folly of it. If it's a consensus, it's not science. But in a nutshell, the reason they came up, it's 97%, and Al Gore says it's 99%. Other people say it's 100% of all intelligent scientists. We feature a high school science teacher in our movie talking about that. I mean, it's done for one simple reason. So the average person doesn't have to think about it or know 1 ounce of the science or even understand the basic principles. It's like toothpaste. All you need to know is if 4 out of 5 dentists recommend this toothpaste, why would you buy any other? This is the one the experts recommend.
Well, that's such a fabulous point to make, because I mean, we've been hearing that toothpaste since I was a kid for 40 yeah. years. You've heard 4 out of 5. Yeah. Well, what did 4 out of 5 scientists say about, you know, the Earth and the Sun and their relative positions in our solar system until Galileo came along and Copernicus? I mean, if you polled scientists, they would have said, well, of course the Earth is the center of the system. So it's the antithesis of the scientific method.
It is. And actually, I go back. first of all, you got tectonic plates, continental drift. They didn't realize that. If you go back to the medieval ages, there were leaders and the judges educated at during the Salem witch trials were chiefly educated at Harvard, and they believed it was common knowledge that the experts all agreed that witches can cause bad weather. This was actually it was Sally Baliunas who gave a great speech on this. It was an appeal to authority during the medieval witch trials in Europe and also later in the Massachusetts in the Bay Colony, which so this is done so people shut down. And it's the same thing. By the way, with COVID, if someone says the CDC recommends masks, they don't care if you could show 1,500 studies over decades and current showing masks don't work. All they care is the head of the CDC, who's an expert, says they work. So that was the appeal to authority in climate. So what they did is they got a survey of 10,000 plus scientists, whittled it down, kept whittling it down to 77 anonymous scientists. We don't know their names. We don't know their affiliations. We don't know their backgrounds or what their exact position. All we know is they answered two questions: is climate warming up and if humans caused it. Many skeptical scientists, not humans caused it, but humans contribute. Many skeptical scientists would agree. That was the basis for 75 out of 77 anonymous scientists. And then later, another study was done by a guy in Australia, and a UN lead scientist went and looked at it, and he said that study was quite literally pulled from thin air. None of the data supported the 97% claims that came out of it. So this is essentially a way to stifle debate, to shut up any dissent, and to appeal to authority, which everything I just mentioned is not science. That is all politics, which is what the climate movement has evolved into. It is a purely political movement claiming to have some kind of scientific, untouchable spirit to it.
Yeah, like Fauci, who said, "You can't criticize me. I am science. I am. I'm the personification. I'm the god of science." Let me ask you a personal question. What happens to those who point out, like yourself, that these people aren't scientists? It's done by polling. It's about power. What happens to people who understand science and who take an iconoclastic stance against these individuals? Talk to us about what happens to people who actually say, you know, this isn't how science works, gentlemen.
Well, one of the people I profile in my first book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate, was Judith Curry. She was the head of the Georgia Institute of Technology of their Earth Science Department, the head scientist. Highly respected. She was with the UN Climate View. ClimateGate, the big scandal that came and showed that the top UN scientists were colluding with journal editors and creating a campaign cause with politics and shaping a media image, enforcing a climate narrative with no dissent, came. And Judith Curry, who's a climatologist, literally walked away from it and started questioning it all. Because she did that, she was featured on Scientific American as a, quote, heretic, unquote. This is the language people use in religion to attack people, and they brought that over to science. And I document in the book multiple professors and scientists losing tenure, losing their positions, getting locked out. One scientist I know is Don Easterbrook. He's a geologist from University of Washington in Washington State. He literally has now been essentially disowned. He's not even allowed on campus to speak anymore. You talk about cancel culture. I like that. The book from the 1980s was Everything I learned in Kindergarten. I can't remember the exact title, but it was like 1985 book. It was everything I learned about COVID and today's cancel culture. I had learned a decade ago in the climate debate because I saw it all play out. If you're the first woman PhD meteorologist, Joanne Simpson, worked at NASA for 50 plus years, decades. First comment after she retires, I am on climate change, I am a skeptic. Now that I'm retired, I can finally say I'm a skeptic. First woman meteorologist, PhD. Imagine all the barriers she had to overcome. Wow. She never would voice her opinion until after she left. And she openly said, now that I'm retired, I can finally say it, I'm a climate skeptic. That tells you how powerful that enforced narrative is that allows no dissent on climate.
And it is the opposite of the scientific method. The books start in the order, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, The Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. And the latest one, you can pre-order it right now. We'll discuss it next. The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. If you haven't seen it already, dear friends, you've got to. The most successful political documentary of the last decade. Over 1 million downloads in the first week. Over 100,000 DVDs already mailed out. It's so important. I have a stake in it. It is, of course, 2,000 Mules from Dinesh D'Souza, produced by the Salem Media Group. Here is the evidence. 2 petabyte worth of data. 4 million minutes of CCTV camera footage of the biggest heist in world history, the stealing of an election. Watch it today. Order the DVDs. Go to salemnow.com. That's 2,000 Mules at salemnow.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolfe. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Got to share this cut. This is from the Davos Forum, Alibaba executive with a very, very shocking vision of the future. Cut to play cut.
Through technology and ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Stay tuned. We don't have it operational, but we will have it soon. He's talking about this as a good thing. How disturbed should we be when we hear this from very powerful global executives?
Well, you should be very disturbed because this is their end goal, is to monitor and track every human on the planet. We saw this with COVID. We saw it with the lockdowns and the curfews. We saw it with all the contact tracing, which they tried to instill, which was a complete failure. But with technology, they can have success. The journal Nature, the same year, had an article out saying people have now been conditioned to COVID lockdowns. It's time to come up with essentially tracking and carbon monitoring of every individual. MasterCard has now joined up with the United Nations in a partnership with called a Docotomy credit card. The World Economic Forum, Davos, has praised the card because the card will monitor your carbon footprint and literally cut off your spending when you reach your maximum. So this is their plan.
Hang on. Let's be clear here. Not when you reach your financial credit maximum. No. It's when you eat too many burgers, when you drive too many cars that aren't electric, your credit card will be cut off. That's what we're talking about, Mark, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. They're talking about your thermostat, your gas bill, your home energy, travel, anything like that. They're going to categorize it. And you're right, beef eating, anything along the line that they determine creates emissions. You're going to get your own. And by the way, Americans, I believe the number is 3 to 5 times average anywhere else in the world. So we're already way over our carbon budget. So we're going to be facing the most constraints of any citizens on the planet once this global agenda happens. And remember, it's a voluntary card from MasterCard and the UN now. How long will that stay voluntary? Again, we're at a point where you're going to go use your bank card someday at a 7-Eleven or a Walmart, and it's going to say your card will not work because you violated a hate speech code on Twitter, and until you delete your tweet, you cannot make this purchase. That's not far-fetched after what you saw happen in Canada with Justin Trudeau. Anyone who even offered a bake sale for the truckers had their banks shut down and their banking completely incapacitated on them. So they want to monitor us first. And second, they want to control us through finances, through this carbon footprint tracker. And this is a new one, too. This is the road to the Great Reset, which is what they're trying to do. It all started. Everything was accelerated. I shouldn't say started with that COVID lockdown. And that's the basis for everything. That's why John Kerry was so excited. He said COVID and climate, they're literally not much. They're exact parallels. They're screaming at us. You can substitute one for the other. If we can do that for a virus, we can do the same thing for the climate, meaning lockdown and control every aspect of the economy.
And this isn't a theory. I mean, this is happening right now in China. It's not just credit cards, yeah. The social credit system. If you say the wrong thing, then you can be canceled from not just going to college or your kids going to college. You won't be allowed to get on a plane or use interurban transport, correct?
Yes. And that, I mean, look at Canada today. People can't even travel within Canada on trains, planes, buses, any kind of public transit, because if they're not vaccinated, there's no scientific basis for that. But they're just doing it because in Canada, Trudeau has the power and he enjoys it. Bill Gates, and I document this multiple times in my books, says if you want to avoid the next pandemic, what country of all the countries would he pick that we should model ourselves after? And it wasn't China, but it was Australia, second worst to China. Bill Gates loves the Australian response. And what was the Australian response? Next to China, the most militarized response to COVID, lockdowns, forced quarantine, military on the beach, clearing people away, police showing up at your house if you put in any kind of a dissenting opinion on social media. That's Bill Gates' utopian vision for the next pandemic. And he's got the World Health Organization and his own experts. His paid Bill Gates experts will have the power, essentially, with the World Health to declare the next pandemic and model a response after Australia, which is what Bill Gates says on multiple occasions is his vision as the way forward.
The new book is The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. The website, really incredibly useful, is climatedepot.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Climate Depot. One aspect of all of this, Mark, that really, you know, there's talking truthfully about what these people are doing at Davos or in the White House. But there's another aspect, and that's the other countries and what they are doing. So there's two aspects of this I'd like you to expand upon. So talk to us about what Davos is telling people, middle class people, to do in rich countries like you and I, how we should be, you know, driving Teslas, eating tofu burgers, and how none of that applies to the people who actually, if you cared about the climate, are the worst offenders, such as China, such as India and Russia. So talk to us about the discrepancy between the real polluters and the developed world. And then secondly, if these people are really serious, if fossil fuels are evil, if, you know, industrialization is evil, how much of this is truly the most pernicious post-colonial colonialism, if it were truly used against, I don't know, third world countries like Africa, who aren't allowed suddenly to use plastics made out of petroleum? So the duality of the standards first, and then the real embedded colonial attitude that these people have.
Yeah, well, on the first point, the way the United Nations, they have a thing called the UN Climate Fund, $100 billion a year. And Hillary Clinton was a big proponent of this as the Secretary of State under Obama when they did the UN Paris Agreement. So this is the way, if you look at some of the when they have a UN Climate Summit, the last one was in Scotland. I'm going to the one in Egypt this year in November. They're having one, the next UN Climate Summit. The highest attending nations are African nations, South American, some of the poorer nations in the world. Why is that? Because they're all exempt from emissions, for one thing. And secondly, they're promised to be recipients of this climate aid, this redistribution, if you will, of money. And I talked to a South African development activist, Leon Lowe, who talked about this. The UN is going to give money to the leaders best able in Africa and South America, Asia, who are best able to lock their citizens in poverty and keep them poor. Because if you're poor, your emissions are low. And that's what the UN's doing. They're bribing, essentially, politicians of poor countries not to allow their people to develop. That's on the extreme end. On the other end, you have China, India, who literally have surpassed the United States The United States is leading the world in reducing our CO2 emissions. Meanwhile, China, India, even John Kerry has admitted multiple times, if the United States shut down our emissions to zero, if all the industrialized nations, Europe, Canada, went to zero, it would not make a difference because China, India, the developing world is ramping up so fast that the emissions, what we do is irrelevant. And that's the thing. All we could do possibly when it comes to reducing emissions is virtue signal, but with real economic pain. The second part of what you asked in terms of the virtue, the colonial attitude. Yes, that is incredible. That I interviewed a UK scientist who studied this, and I also went to the UN climate summit. It was in South Africa. I interviewed a college student. They go around the world and they preach essentially to poor people with animal agriculture, backbreaking poverty, no running water, huts made of dung, that they're doing it right, that essentially they're living essentially the Earth sustainability dream, and that the rest of the world is complete nonsense and we're destroying it. So this comes out to a new form of insidious colonialism, where at least the old colonialism, with all its faults, you could argue it brought modern medicine, infrastructure, wealth, development to a lot of countries. And of course, there was a lot of horrors associated with that. But this new form of colonialism, the green colonialism, is evil because it stops people at back-breaking subsistence levels of living, of 1 billion people, no running water and electricity, from not developing. It denies them cheap fossil fuels on that end. And that is part of the problem. And it's a way that white, wealthy Westerners can preach to people of color without running water and electricity that, sorry, you can't have what we did because the earth can't take it. So therefore, we're going to let you have a solar panel on your hut made of dung and you'll be happy. But you can't make our mistakes as they fly around the world and go to Davos and UN summits and private jets.
Yeah, I just think of one aspect, you know, the evil that is fossil fuels and the plastics that are made out of oil. And I think about, you know, how Africa, you know, they use plastic jugs in rural areas to walk whatever it is, a mile, 2 miles, 5 miles to the clean drinking well and to carry the water back. And then some white person who flew there on jet says, no, 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 you can't use a plastic jug because that comes from that evil thing, oil. I mean, it is truly pernicious, and it is, you know, the hyper-colonialism of these quote-unquote elites. Got to ask you, I mentioned this last time, I think this is the biggest success in a bad way of this whole cult that is the climate change modern Malthusians. CO2, Mark, the idea that they convinced a planet that is populated by carbon-based life forms, that carbon is bad and that CO2 is bad, when CO2 is actually how vegetation makes oxygen for us. That has to be the biggest swindle of human history.
It is. In fact, I've talked to, and in my book, I featured Will Happer from Princeton University, the foremost expert on the greenhouse gas theory, who's one of the biggest climate skeptics in the world. And he says we're in a CO2 famine. CO2 is not a pollutant. It's a trace essential gas in the atmosphere. Humans inhale oxygen. We exhale carbon dioxide. And for the first time that I'm aware of in human history, they now want to regulate what humans exhale as a pollutant. And in some UK government-funded report that came out in 2019, Sebastian, they want to regulate CO2 as we do asbestos. So think about that. Humans are exhaling CO2. Human breath is CO2. And now we have academics from a British-funded study claiming we should start regulating CO2 as asbestos because of the climate emergency. This is a war on humanity and on humans, and it has bastardized science. More, even NASA has admitted the Earth is greening due to rising carbon dioxide. And what's interesting is the climate activists will acknowledge that, but they'll say, yes, the CO2 is causing more fertilization, but we're going to have more weeds and we're going to have more mosquitoes. Whatever they can do to find some bad aspect, they'll do that. But we're also having crop yield increases.
Right. The fuel for vegetation is increasing, and that's a bad thing. Absolute insanity. His movie is Climate Hustle. His website is climatedepot.com. We're talking to Mark Morano. All right, let's have some fun for our last few minutes. Let's play this delicious cut from Davos from the Elites, cut 3.
So I'm going to throw this immediately out to the audience and say, how many of you are driving an electric vehicle at the moment? 1, 2, 3, 4. So I would say that probably constitutes less than 5% of the persons sitting here in this room.
I just love the way she says vehicle with that H in the middle. So when you're at Davos and, you know, five people in this crowded room have electric vehicles, there are utter hypocrites. Gotta ask you, big picture, Mark, are you an optimist? Do you think most Americans, most people in the developed world see through their hypocrisy and can do something about it?
Yes. In fact, the last chapter of the book, Sebastian, is about how you can resist the great reset, the great reject. And I think, one of the things is Loudoun County, Virginia. It's so shocking. This was started out as a rebellion against the local school board, masks, critical race, trans activism. And because of that spark by parents absolutely refusing, willing to get arrested, shutting down these little school boards, it became a national focal point. That created a shockwave in Virginia with a Republican governor. That Republican governor and a near loss in New Jersey forced the Democrats to do focus groups. The focus groups came back, and this is in the, according to the New York Times, showed that even the Democratic base didn't want it. The science had changed, the political science. The Democratic base wanted to get back to normal. That caused cities overnight to drop mask mandates, vaccine passports. So it just shows you a small group, a small band of dissenters willing to cause a ruckus in Loudoun County School Board literally was part of the rebellion that reversed all of this spring almost overnight when this happened. And it also shows you the power of one Trump-appointed judge wiped out mask mandates on airplanes. Now, they're appealing it, but that was amazing. It took 2 years, though. So I argue that the Berlin Wall didn't come down because the East German government decided in 1989 that, well, we've decided 40 years of oppression is enough. Let's let the people of East Berlin be free and reunite with West Germany. No, the Berlin Wall came down because people no longer gave their consent to tyranny. And I think that's what happened. And that's the only way Americans in the world can fight back. Do not give your consent, whether it's any level, to this climate tyranny, COVID tyranny, and lockdowns, and unelected bureaucrats trying to rule every aspect. That's the only way out. That's the first major step, and it's the most effective.
Right. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I mean, that you know, not just the parents' revolt in Northern Virginia, but this one judge who now has affected our free travel marcellus, although the DOJ is appealing it. Of course they are. Let's just mention her name. U.S. District Court Judge Catherine Kimball Mizell. One lady can make a difference. That's why it's up to us. I like this idea of the great reject of the great reset. Read the last chapter of his book. I promise you're going to get the foreword this weekend. It's called The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. And go to climatedepot.com. He is Mark Morano. Thank you, Mark. Keep fighting the good fight. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Wherever you are, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people...
is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
It was an epic struggle, the largest amphibious assault ever staged. codenamed Operation Overlord, the invasion of Europe kicked off an offensive that wouldn't end until Hitler's thousand-year Reich lay in ruins. The beach landings at Normandy would involve more than a 250,000 soldiers, sailors, and airmen. But it all began with just a handful of men. In particular, three small bands of specially trained warriors with three critical missions. U.S. Army paratroopers called Pathfinders were to jump into France first, ahead of the main Allied airborne force, to set up special equipment to guide incoming aircraft to their drop zones. British paratroopers of the 9th Parachute Battalion were to knock out a German artillery battery that defended the Normandy beaches. And U.S. Navy combat demolition units were to come ashore in the very first waves of assault troops to blow up beach obstacles and clear the way for the landing craft. All three proved to be extraordinarily dangerous jobs.
How we ever accomplished and got in there, I don't know, but we did it.
I tried to do the best of my ability, the job that they presented to me.
We were scared out of our wits. I get the willies now if I think about it. My wife will tell you, I mean, I used to wake up with dreams at night, shutting my head off.
These men knew that failure was not an option. To a large degree, the success of D-Day depended on them.
I think that is what each one of them fought for. Not necessarily mom, apple pie, and baseball, but they fought for their buddies. And in accomplishing the tasks that they did on D-Day makes them all heroes.
That was 78 years ago today, the D-Day landings. The day before, American troops and allies embarked on that mission to liberate Europe from fascism. This is what their commander, Dwight Eisenhower, Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force, wrote to them. Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. Your task will not be an easy one. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940 and 1941. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck. And let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. Signed, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Just that clip, that footage, of the Pathfinders preparing for the D-Day landings. And the text of that brief letter, it's two paragraphs. They seem as if carved out of a novel, a fictional universe that has very little to do with our lives today. The ideas they represent, the language used in the first sentence of Eisenhower's letter to the troops, just the capitalized phrase, Great Crusade, or the closing lines, beseeching the blessing of Almighty God, also capitalized, seems as if it were hewn from events centuries ago, not a lifetime ago. 78 years is a modern lifetime. How we have fallen as a civilization. How many of those today of the same age as those GIs and those Marines, 18, 19, 20, could do what they did? And ideology would have us believe women are just the same and they could do what they did as well. Here's the challenge. As President Trump asked in perhaps his most significant speech when he was standing at the memorial for the Warsaw Uprising, he asked a very simple question. Whether we have what it takes as a civilization to fight and defeat those who would wish to destroy us. 78 years ago, it was an enemy outside of our borders, but it was an enemy inside our civilization. It was Germany, part of Judeo-Christian civilization, that had to be defeated. Yes, Tojo's Japan as well, but it was fundamentally a war started within our family of nations. Today, the fascism still exists, but it is inside our borders. It is people who think it is fine to deploy the FBI or the US Marshals to arrest a political opponent at an airport and put him in shackles and leg irons. Why? Because they don't like him politically. That's what happened. We will discuss it today to one of my former colleagues in the White House. We may have defeated Hitler's Third Reich. We may have defeated the communist threat, the existential threat of the Soviet Union that replaced it. But today, the fascists are alive, and they're here, and they're Americans, and we must stop them to save our republic. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. This is America First on the Salem News Channel. Wherever you are, be sure to subscribe to this program. Go to Spotify, punch in my name and America First. Share the links. Guarantee you never miss a second of the show. Write a review. We'll be back with my Salem colleague, the one and only Dinesh D'Souza.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.